Oh.
Blog Talk Radio.
Space, the final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Their ongoing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It's time for Trek Talking to the Overflow Show. And tonight we're going to be talking about Mr. Spock. And you might be wondering why that clip was played at the beginning of the show, because that was the first time that anybody other than Captain Kirk actually said those classic words. And, of course, that was none other than Leonard Nimoy. So before we get too far into the show, I want to go around the table and introduce all my Trekspurts. And as usual, we'll start off with my trifecta from Portland. How you doing tonight, David?
I'm doing good. I just got done watching part of Discovery again. It was interesting watching the whole Pike series.
But no donuts? No donuts tonight?
No, unfortunately.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Well, we'll let you stay anyways. That's okay. We also have with us Paul. How you doing tonight, Paul?
I have and shall always be your weirdest guest. That's true. How you doing?
You're the wine guy. What are you talking about?
That's just ankle deep of my depth, my friend. Oh, ankle deep, ankle deep.
And we also have with us, hailing from Portland, we have the same Eric. How you doing, Eric?
I am doing great. I also just finished watching some Star Trek. I watched last week's Strange New Worlds episode again, and then I started watching Damaged, the Enterprise episode, so can't wait to talk about that on Thursday. But, man, we got some 71-degree sunny weather here in Portland. It's a nice day, so good day to talk Trek.
You know, we broke a heat index record here. It was 93 degrees on Saturday, and then it was 41 on Saturday night. Like, wow.
Yeah. I had friend who traveled to Toronto, I believe, and she said that there was some kind of freak storm. It was either Toronto or Ottawa. I'm sorry, I can't remember which location, but somewhere there was like a freak tornado storm where one of those temperature changes happened, and it like took out part of her hometown while she was there. Craziest thing. So, yeah, crazy weather stuff we're having these days.
It is. It's very crazy. And speaking of crazy weather, we also have with us Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing all right. It's a calm 90 now. At least we don't have any wind. But, yeah, I can understand the odd cold front that's coming, passing through part of the United States was the one that hit us last week. Because one day we hit 102. The next 2 days after that, the high of 84.
Wow.
I think it was Friday. I think it was Friday I woke up and it was 74. And that should be about the high, low of the day at sunrise. No, it wasn't. It dropped to about 69 or 70. So.
Hey, Charles. Are you living in the forest?
Wow.
Am I living where?
Yeah.
In the Forge.
If there was one place that was as close to Vulcan of any of us, it would definitely be down in Las Vegas, I think.
That's where the stalagmites are.
Let's not say Las Vegas. Let's say the Southwest.
Desert Southwest, yeah.
There's parts of California, Arizona, and Nevada all get this big heat wave.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
California, it's the high deserts north of L.A. They get it too. Palmdale and such. And Palm Springs.
Well, anyways, guys, now that we have the weather report around the globe, what do you say we talk about some Star Trek?
Sounds good to
Sound
know.
Sound good?
Oh, what a day to breathe a sense of connection with our hosts, right? You understand what they're going through because you know what the weather's like. So that's good. It's like good chat.
We are part of something larger and interconnected. Excellent.
<That's right.
laughs> Yes. So, Spock actually has a first name. Did you guys know that? And,
go ahead.
Yeah. So Paramount Plus made a mistake when they had their, they don't make mistakes, but they put up posters at the Mission Chicago convention for Strange New Worlds. And on each poster had the name of each character. And they had Dr. Mbenga's poster up with his first name on it, which has never been uttered anywhere. And, of course, Mr. Spock's first name as well. They quickly took them down and said they made a mistake and they weren't supposed to go up. But they wouldn't have printed them if they were wrong. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's like very as canon adjacent as you can get, much more so canon adjacent than the origin of that name. But we still haven't seen it on screen, so it's not quite canon. But, it's right there. Right there.
I think that when we have the Spock going back to bring, I think we may actually hear the name or something.
And I'm assuming this is a second name or something because obviously his real Vulcan name is unpronounceable. We all know. So
well, this one's not really very pronounceable. So this one is Sachin Takai.
Yeah,
I
Sachin Takai Spock. Which
Chitin Takai Spock.
Yeah, comes from a novel in Barbara Hamley's Ishmael series from back in the 80s. So that's where the origin of the name came from. And that, you're right, they put it on the posters, man. So as far as I'm concerned, that's his name.
But in a way, guys, doesn't it kind of like make the mystery and the kind of, you know, coolness of him less so by getting into that degree of Baroque minutiae? I mean, he's just always been Mr. Spock, and that's what makes him so cool, right? I mean, this is like a few years ago where they decided that Emperor Palpatine's first name was Sheev, right? I don't know if any Star Wars fans are familiar with that. It just kind of makes you go, because I don't know. I just don't find that it almost makes it less appealing to me to know that kind of thing. I mean, the way they did it on the original show was so cool. He just shakes his head to Jill Ireland and says, "You couldn't pronounce it." And that's just beautiful. It preserves the mystery. And I don't know. I think it's sometimes a little bit too much mystery revealing and makes things a little less compelling, perhaps. Devil's
well,
advocate.
We know.
I thought his first name was Grock.
We know that he has one.
That's what the internet will do to us, though, Paul. And I agree.
But
I think
should
that,
he
know,
have
some...
one?
But well, and you know, I would argue that is to each their own. You know, some people don't want to know that stuff. Some people do want to know that stuff. Some people feel like it adds to the depth of the character to know a little bit more about them. So, you know, I don't know. I could see it either way.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit a lot about Spock tonight. And we have to start off with I Grock Spock. And for those of you who don't Grock Spock, that's okay. You don't have to Grock Spock if you don't want to Grock Spock. But I Grock Spock was a word that was penned by Robert Heinlein for his 1961 sci-fi novel, Stranger in a Strange Land, which I missed. I've never read it. So I don't know if it's any good or not. Anybody read it?
Classic of science fiction.
Yeah, it's you got to read it. If you love science fiction, you got to read it. Yeah.
So I've never read it, but the Oxford Dictionary defines Grock as to understand intuitively or by empathy to establish a rapport with. So yeah, I can definitely see that. And to empathize or communicate sympathetically with, also to experience enjoyment. In late 1967, during protest against canceling Star Trek, fans popularized the term I Grock Spock. And if you ever saw the Get a Life skit that William Shatner did on Saturday Night Live, it's an absolute classic. You will see Dana Carvey standing in the front row with a giant I Grock Spock shirt. And he's the one when William Shatner says, you know, get a life. And he says, so are you saying we should pay more attention to the movies? That was him. And he's wearing a yellow I Grok Spock shirt. So I thought, let's talk about Spock. So what is it that makes Spock so interesting? I mean, really, what is it? And for me, I think it's because on TOS, he's the only alien we ever see. How many other aliens are stationed on the Enterprise? They're all from Earth. To my knowledge, I don't recall anyone on the Enterprise other than Spock that wasn't from Earth. Do you guys remember anyone ever coming up other than Spock? I think he was the only one.
He was really the main one, at least. You know, there may have been some passing ones later on in the series that had super minor references, but he's the main one, right? I mean, and
he's
that's the
big guy.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the core of why so many people, he's got such enduring appeal. This is a character that people have been bananas with for, you know, decades, right? And I think a lot of it is just, it's that enduring appeal of he is the outcast that we all relate to, right? He is a guy who is part of two worlds and doesn't feel that he can wholly be himself or show himself in either. Right. It's like he's always got to be suppressing part of who he is. And I think that really resonated with the audience and touched a nerve, because everybody kind of feels like that and can relate to that. That's a powerful thing, man.
And we have to remember, too, when TOS came out, the 60s were full of strife. You know, civil rights movement was going on. It was all kinds of strife going on. So a lot of people that were watching Star Trek more than likely could identify with where Spock was. He didn't fit here and he didn't fit there. And I think that a lot of people could really, really relate to Spock and identify with him. But also,
I was just going to mention that shows up right at the beginning of the series too, what Paul was just talking about, because I think it's the Enemy Within, which is just the fourth episode in, which of course is the one where Kirk gets split into his two halves, you know, and there's this scene where Spock is sitting with McCoy talking about what's going on. And he says, you know, being split into two halves is no theory with me, doctor. I have a human half, you see, as well as an alien half submerged constantly at war with the other. Personal experience, doctor, I survive it because my intelligence wins out over both, making them live together.
Wow.
I love that line from that episode.
That's amazing. And that probably came right on the heels of the Naked Time episode, right, where suddenly everybody lost all of their self-control, and he had to go into a room all by himself and just break down and lose that control and try to regain it again. And it's just, yeah, it's to him, it's like shameful to be able to have a moment like that. And we get to see that. It's like uncomfortable because we're watching him and there's no one else there. And so he's just being super vulnerable with us as the audience. And you just see that turmoil and that struggle, and just people related to that so, so, so much.
And I know go ahead, Charles.
I was going to bring up an interesting point that this has been brought up before. One of the minor tensions that occurred on the TOS crew was the fact the amount of mail that Leonard Nimoy received from fans. One week he got a few letters, and he'd easily be able to take care of his letters. All of a sudden, they were bringing in mail bags of letters and handing them directly to him. He was getting the bulk of the fan mail too. So it was the fans, even back with the start of the series, loved what he was doing with that character. So the fan love has been there from the beginning.
And I think that for me, on TNG, I saw Worf and I was like, boom, there's the guy. And I think the reason is because Spock is an alien. We know nothing about him. He's wrapped in mystery. We don't know about his planet. We don't know about his people. We don't know anything. And that mystery, I think, attracts people and makes people want to know more about him, because everyone else is from Earth, but this guy is from another planet, and people just want to know. They're curious about those things. So,
well, and Jim, and he's from another planet, but yet he's living in a human's world. So that's also an interesting aspect of it, right? Because he's like trying to fit in, but yet he is that alien guy. So that's the perfect allegory for so many things, right? That I think that's why people find Spock so like universally identifiable, is because what Paul was saying, he's the other. So, you know, if you feel like you're the other, you probably identify with Spock if you're a Star Trek fan.
And he
so was Deanna Troi.
Deanna Troi, And smart is sexy, right? I mean,
that's what I've been told. Yes.
smart is sexy. You know, here's this guy, and he's extremely intelligent, and he's soft-spoken, and he keeps to himself. And I think that a lot of people just found that particular trait about Mr. Spock to be fascinating. pun.
We know more than Nurse Chapel does for sure in both TOS and the new series.
Absolutely. And back in the early days of Star Trek conventions, and it's sad that Star Trek conventions don't really exist anymore. That breaks my heart more than anything. Now you have these multi-conglomerate comic cons and things like this. You don't really have a Star Trek convention per se.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do. AKA what used to be Star Trek Las Vegas, 55-year mission. That is actually a pure Star Trek, even though other groups will join in. You also have Mission Chicago, which was a pure Star Trek convention. I'm sure other fan bases came in, but these two conventions,
magazine from 1993, and look, and you will probably see a Star Trek convention every weekend somewhere, and everywhere. Now they're not. I mean, you got to go to Las Vegas or Chicago. Yeah, they're not Star Trek, there is Trek Conoroga, but that's a different thing.
Your point, Jim, is that Star Trek established that whole culture, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's just
right.
You know, back in the 60s and the 70s, I mean, I'm eek and happy to be a witness to attest to it. Being a nerd and being a geeky guy who's into science fiction was absolutely not cool. I mean, now the geeks have inherited the earth, so to speak, in present company included, right? And so it's like it's become a huge thing, like you're saying, where there's like if there's a convention, it's like now there's Star Wars conventions, there's Babylon 5 conventions, there's Expanse, there's everything. It's all, you know, you go to any big con and stuff like that. But back in its, you know, the primordial days of old, right, those were the first conventions, purely were Star Trek conventions. And it was just this kind of extreme, odd thing, right? But it was the most foundational, beloved thing.
And the reason why I bring that up is because way, way back in the day, like 70s, 80s, early 90s type era, when you went to conventions, there were these things called fanzines. You guys ever read a fanzine or know what I'm talking
about? Oh, absolutely.
So for those of you out there who don't know what a fanzine is, back before, yes, and I'm going way back, before we had the internet, before we had cell phones, before we had any of that, when you went to a convention, people would actually sit at their typewriters and write stories about Kirk and Spock. And they would type them up, and they would bring them, and they would have them photocopied. And then they would staple them together, and they would sell them at Star Trek conventions as fanzines, which were fans' versions of stories of what they wanted the characters to be like and do. I'm going back now. I told you, way back. One of the most popular fanzines that were floating around back in that day was Kirk and Spock Erotica. And a lot of people thought that Spock and Kirk had a relationship. And back in the 60s, the whole LGBTQ+ community had absolutely zero I mean zero representation anywhere. And a lot of these people looked at Spock and looked at Kirk and saw a glance, a look, a feel, a touch, a something that made them identify with Spock and Kirk and write these fanzines. So I think that that's a whole other level of intrigue about the character that brought in a whole bunch of people that otherwise wouldn't have been there. If you guys remember fanzines at all.
And there's no question that fan stuff like that absolutely generates a lot of excitement for the show. And, you know, we all on this show absolutely are guilty of headcanoning a ton of things that are never talked about on screen. And I understand that those fanzines of that era were instrumental to so many different kind of marginalized groups, to helping them feel more connected, you know, by seeing what they wanted to see in these things. I think that the phenomena you're specifically talking about is two people shipping with one another. And a lot of people shipped Kirk and Spock together back in the day because of those fanzines and because of the fiction that was being written about those two characters. So yeah, I love fan generated stuff that generates excitement about characters like Spock, because Spock is a character who already has a lot of depth on screen, but there are, you know, myriad layers to that onion as we are learning in Strange New Worlds too, right? Yeah. We're already seeing new like layers to Spock in Strange New Worlds that we haven't seen before.
And speaking of Strange New Worlds, when The Cage came out, number one, I'm sure everybody's seen The Cage. Number one was an Illyrian, and which we find out for sure on Strange New Worlds. And she's highly intelligent. She's very calculated. She's very smart. She's very articulate. And Spock, if you guys remember, is more emotional. And he's not the Spock that we know and love on TOS. He's a much different version. When they decided to make Star Trek into a series, they said, dump the woman. People won't accept the woman on the bridge. It's ridiculous. Dump her. So I think what they did is they took all that they had done with number one, wrapped it up, and put it into Mr. Spock and created a new character. And I think that was a smart move. Not dumping number one, but creating.
Well, you just mentioned Jim, Strange New Worlds, and they're not exactly keeping it a secret. I mean, in a couple of weeks, we're going to get a very, very Spock-centric episode that is actually even playing on its title, plays on, you know, the title of the original Amok Time episode, right? So I think we're going to get a big pullback in this franchise's reality of what's going on with early days of Spock and his relationship and early days and seeing on Vulcan. It's going to be fascinating. I don't know if we're going to see his parents or not, new actors playing them perhaps, but it's going to be exciting. What I am really curious is to draw a line back from where we are going to go shortly to the original first season, because we got between that first season and a half, right, up through Amok Time of the, I think it was the one of the first episodes of, or probably the first episode of season two. What does everybody think are some of the most, you know, character defining moments for Spock, right? That really set him apart. I got one I want to just throw out there because it's one of the first episodes I ever remember seeing when I was younger. Right. And so outing myself demographically here, but I remember when the show was on the air, right. Or, you know, early reruns, but Galileo 7. And it might not be the first one some people think of in terms of Spock stories, right? But it, in a way, it's fascinating because he's getting his first command, quote unquote, right? There's this shuttle mission, and he's a senior officer, and they run into a hell. They run into the worst planet they could ever crash land on. Things are really bad, and it's a real test of what he thinks command is, and he thinks it's all about the rules and all about the structure and all about the hierarchy, and everybody just hates him. You should show it in corporate training. It's like leadership 101, what not to do. He's just, you know, quoting chapter and verse from the rule manual, and he's, you know, practically getting people killed and, you know, sending red shirts out to die. And it's just, it's you know, it does not go well until he finally starts to bend a little bit and, you know, gets to a place where there can at least be mutual respect between him and the crew. They start to understand why he's like he is. But initially, there is such fiery resistance to him. I mean, it's really dramatic. They don't get him or where he's coming from at all, given the life or death circumstances they're in. None of those rule books matter to them. So I always thought that was a really fascinating first look at his evolution, and right, the way you see him as far as this, like, it's a lesson for him. Does logic mean that rules are it and that they're black and white? You know, it's just like he's a man who can see himself as a, pardon the old expression, like a half-breed, right? And he, for somebody in those two worlds, do you have to live a black and white existence? And I think that's what he learns on that episode. So I thought that was a fascinating one. But again, stuff from season one, there's some great examples there of Spock really showing us who he is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Let me throw in a couple of them. I can't think of the episode title. What was the first time Spock did a mind meld?
Oh, the first time?
That would be Dagger of the Mind.
Oh, no, the Dagger of the Mind, right.
Okay. Dagger of the Mind with the prisoner.
Dagger, okay. Then I would put almost two episodes. End of season one, middle to end of season one, I think we really got a couple of good perspectives of him, because you had the mind meld, the first time Spock could communicate with an alien like that. Then let's also, we got an entirely different perspective of Spock in the only two-parter TOS ever had. Menagerie.
Yeah, that's a great one, Charles.
AKA the cage. And I think we got a very interesting perspective of Spock. And I think that those three episodes really gave us a true effect. It's like, yeah, this guy's got a lot of layers to him. Even if it was the 60s.
And Menagerie is so great because he's willing to go up against the all of Starfleet, all of the rules,
yes,
and everything to do the right thing by a friend.
He wants to lose and lose his career to save his captain.
Yeah, because of his friendship with him, right? So he's actually doing something that's really emotional, which is amazing. So I totally agree. I mean, that's a super revealing. He commits mutiny, right? That's mutiny, mister.
Yeah.
He commits mutiny and false programs the computers, goes up against Starfleet, breaks, you know, incurs what's the only death penalty still on Starfleet's books. It's amazing. And you're like, what is this guy doing this for? And then when you find out, it's like, wow. I mean, it really, how do you not feel endeared to him? Excellent choice, brother.
Yes.
And then Kirk turns around and repays him by shooting him out of a torpedo onto the Genesis planet and flies away and leaves him behind.
That's a good point. I mean, that's a good point, Jim, because we're talking about quintessential Spock moments, and I do think that the movies contain some of these moments. I mean, we went all the way through TOS, and there are amazing character development moments that happen all throughout that series. But for me, you know, I grew up, I mean, the TOS that I was familiar with was a handful of episodes that I watched at my local library on 16mm film, because I didn't really see it on television reruns. So like I saw the Menagerie probably a dozen times and, I saw a bunch of those kind of classic episodes, but not very many. So the depth wasn't there. When I got to the movies, I really, personally got interested, in this character. And I love so much of the Spock stuff from the movie. So one that I'm not going to do the Star Trek II one, because I think I'll let somebody else have that one. And that one is obviously right up there. But I'm going to talk about a Star Trek IV one that I think is really special, because one of the things that is indicative of Spock is that he has a strained relationship with his father. And we kind of learn that back in TOS. We see that continue throughout the Next Generation shows. And then we see it continue his relationship and what the relationship looks like later on in the movies. And I love Star Trek IV because there's this moment where, you know, basically Sarek is leaving. He's departing, and Spock is standing there saying goodbye to him, and Kirk is kind of off to the side. And Sarek looks at Spock, and he says, your associates are people of good character. Yes. And Spock says, they're my friends. And he says, do you have a message for your mother? And he says, yes, tell her I feel fine. I love that scene so much because not only is it resolution of kind of like the Sarek Spock relationship to me in a lot of ways, but it's also the like Spock showing off his emotional side to his dad. It's like he's come out to his dad now, right? And his dad has accepted him, and now he's like, okay, now I'm just going to be myself. Tell her I feel fine. Love that scene so much from Star Trek IV.
It's almost like a bookend, the end scene of Journey to Babel, right, where the two of them are side by side in the sick bay beds, and suddenly they have, like, you know, rapport, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you marry her? Great. Well, where they finally have are able to connect just a little bit.
Well, one of the lines I use with our host all the time when he does his when we do our con, it's frequently I'll go with the liner from Spock. Jim, your name's Jim.
Right.
Spock has
Uncle
recognition
Jim.
Of finally realizing who Kirk is.
Yeah.
Oh,
when he's getting his memory back.
For me, there's the scene in Star Trek II when he allows Savick to pilot the Enterprise.
Mm.
And McCoy and Kirk are just standing there like, well, what's going on? But the for me, it's Star Trek V. You guys knew this was coming, right? Does this surprise you?
Of course.
when we find out that he has a brother in Cybok, and Cybok controls him with his birth, and Sarek says he's so human, and then he says to Spock, "Come on, let's go to the bridge." And Spock says, "No. He's going to stay behind." Now, McCoy is heading right out the door with Cybok, but Spock stays with Kirk, even though Cybok already, I don't know what's mind controlled them. I don't know what the proper word is, but even though Cybok did his thing, Spock chose to stay with Kirk, where everybody else went with Cybok, including McCoy. And then McCoy stops and says, well, you know, I'm going to have to stay too, but Spock is the one that actually made that choice to stay. And I think that speaks a lot about Spock, that he chose Kirk over his brother, stepbrother, but over his brother. And my favorite line is at the end when Spock blows up the creature and Kirk is on the bridge and he's going to give him a hug, and Spock says, "Please, Captain, not for the Klingon." Oh my God! I lost it. When I was sitting in the movie theater, I leaned over to my wife and I said, "He better give Spock a hug, because if he doesn't, forget it." And he did. And Spock said, "Please, Captain, not in front of the Klingons," because Spock understands Kirk and his emotional platitudes, and I think that's great. So those are mine. Well, there's a lot, but those are my two favorite ones.
Oh,
so
man.
Listen, guys, we have to take we got to take a very quick commercial break here, guys, and we're going to take it with Spock.
Well, fascinating is a word I use for the unexpected. Fascinating. 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 Fascinating, Captain. Fascinating. Fascinating. most fascinating thing happened. Fascinating. Fascinating. But it would be a fascinating project. Fascinating. 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 But quite impossible. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating material. Fascinating. 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 You are a disembodied brain. Fascinating. Fascinating. A fascinating cultural development. This is fascinating. 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 Fascinating.
Fascinating.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating. Please, Spock, do me a favor and don't say it's fascinating. No. But it is interesting.
So how many times did Spock say fascinating?
That was so good. Oh, man. So good.
A lot.
I wish I had been counting. I mean, it had to be 100. It was so many.
Yep, it's a lot. And we have a caller on the line, guys, and I think I recognize this number. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talking. What's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
So this is Anna, and hello.
How are you doing, Anna?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We're talking about Mr. Spock. Is he your favorite character?
I don't know if he's my favorite, but he really is just so compelling. Like, you know, there's never a time you don't want to know what's going on with Spock. Like, I always am interested what he's up to. He's not maybe my absolute favorite, but just something about him. And he is emotional. That's how he seems to me. So I'm wondering, what does Vulcan emotion mean, you know? And I just haven't watched the show as much as you all have. I felt like more of a Star Trek nerd before I started listening to your show, and it's awesome because I'm learning a lot, you know. But in terms of Vulcan emotions, I'm wondering if there are shows that you need more, like culturally, how they see emotions or kind of, you know, the threshold for which you would say Spock has more or less emotions, and maybe is it a Vulcan he has more or less emotions than, or just like a human, or it's like Vulcans have less emotions than everyone? I don't know. So I think I would be interested in hearing more about maybe why you think he doesn't have emotions.
This is kind of a common. I think there are some misconceptions about the way that Mr. Spock is portrayed. Some people automatically go to that he does not have emotions, but I think Jim was just probably about to elaborate on the fact that he does, in fact, Jim, right, have intense emotions.
Absolutely.
And so culturally, Vulcans, they way back when, and you learn this if you watch Star Trek Enterprise, actually. And, we here on the show will tout the several episodes of Enterprise. But there's a great episode, which the name will escape me right now. Maybe one of y'all can help me out. But where we get kind of some history on this, and we learn that the Vulcans, you know, used to be a kind of a barbaric people. And it was the teachings of this one man named Surak who sort of brought the concept of logic culturally to Klingon or to Vulcans. And so they just kind of culturally started forcing themselves to rely on logic and to tamper down their own emotions. And they did this through ritual. They did this through daily practice, daily meditation. They did it through martial arts, through art, through all of these different things. And once they kind of culturally had sort of taken that identity on, then anybody who kind of was outside of that was considered a deviant. And in fact, there are some interesting stories in Star Trek Enterprise about deviant factions of Vulcans who don't necessarily believe in the concept of logic, and what does that mean these days? So Spock has, not only does he have the Vulcan side right, but then he's got the human side. So it's kind of like he's got a really super violently emotional side, which is the Vulcan side that's tamped down by culture. And then he has kind of the normal emotional human side that's just balanced in the same way that it, presumably it's balanced for most of us. You know, if you just averaged us all out, it would be Spock's human side, I guess.
Seriously, yeah. Fascinating.
If you really want to see an interesting side of the emotional side of a Vulcan, I think the go-to episode is Sarek from TNG.
Mm-hmm.
When he allows his emotions to come into the car.
It's Sarek, the name of his father.
Oh.
That's the episode.
Okay. I'm going to look that up. I have questions about his dad too, and his, you know, what he did to Kirk, and how people see the father, if they really, you know, like Spock or because of his father, like, you know, kind of reusing Spock more as a person, and then, you know, wouldn't be loyal to him. But it seems like they're all really friends, like they're all truly friends. So I wondered about the father, if he had really portrayed Kirk or not. But also in terms of just talking about the law and logic and emotion, and I know they had the big trial with Kirk and his father was involved and everything, but, you know, logic and emotion totally go together. And the law, when you use logic, you're using emotion and you're working in a way that's not really black and white. You know what I mean? And hierarchical, it's how the law I think should work, but it often doesn't. So,
that's a really good point. And I actually, you know, what that makes me think of is a line from Star Trek III that has always made me a little bit, the end of Star Trek II, that has always made me a little bit uncomfortable, because during Spock's funeral, Kirk says something about you know, Spock's soul being of anybody he's ever met the most human. And I think I know what his intention is there, but what it does is it doesn't, it kind of like means that that's as good as he gets, you know, and his Vulcan side kind of isn't really part of the show. And I agree, the emotional Vulcan side and then the cultural, logical Vulcan side, that all works together in that culture. And then mixing that, it's not that they're diametrically opposed is what you're saying, right? They're not opposite.
Oh, yeah, no, I see that, yeah.
right.
For sure. And so this is still a confusion for me. So the Vulcans are more emotional, and that's why this reformer came in to try to deal with what they considered kind of fervor or mass emotions getting out of control. Or that's still a little confusing. I had no idea of that history, or did I get that wrong?
Nope, you're right.
Were they?
You're absolutely
right. Oh, wow, I had no idea about that. Okay. And in a way that makes sense, maybe seems to me so emotional.
Yeah, absolutely. And they have, you know, particular, even their hormones are affected. So, you know, like Vulcans, at least Vulcan males, I'm not sure if it happens with females or not, but once every 7 years, you know, they go into a crazy, like, emotional, hormone-driven state where they crave copulation with somebody else. So that is like a seriously emotional, like uncontrollable hormone driven thing that is not logical. Well, I mean, I guess it's logical from the standpoint of procreation.
It is logical, though. That's,
yeah. But
in my opinion.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And if there's an episode of Star Trek Discovery in season one that deals with Sarek and Spock and where that whole problem came up with, how that started, like the near the end of season one, Eric, or right in the of Discovery.
Which problem? The
where we find out of why Spock and his father haven't spoken in so long.
Oh, yes.
That's when Burnham. He's on the ship with he's on the shuttle with Burnham.
Right.
Because she's trying to rescue him. and she right. has to go into his mind to find out the path, find out the truth of the past.
Yep.
That's on Star Trek Discovery. It's like, I don't know, episode 8, maybe, or
like
7?
That. Yeah.
Yeah, of Star Trek Discovery.
I think that was before they went to the other side.
It was. Yeah.
Yep, it's well, it's there, though.
So, other quintessential Spock moments. We probably only have 15 minutes or so left, so let's get some more of these out. Charles, did you have another one that you wanted to share?
Oh, yes. Where's my list? Another one where we really get a good aspect of Spock's scientific mind. And this is another episode. We don't think about it. But this is another episode that really has repeated through Star Trek, City on the Edge of Forever. How important was it for Spock to be there to let Kirk know what happened to history and to realize what they need to do to fix history? And the work he did trying to build that computer.
Yeah, that was fun to watch. I love his little contraption.
Yeah. Out of sticks and stones, literally.
Basically.
Stone knives and bear skins.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim.
But to build that and what he was able to do and get that information. And it's the first... This is the first occasion of seeing a Vulcan in a skull cap covering his ears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's not just the source of information
I'll do
either.
That again.
No,
he's
not
just the source of information. He's really there almost acting as Kirk's conscience, right? To remind him about what has to be done. It's just like, now that he knows, he's like, Jim, I kind of found out she's got to die, dude. It's like,
yeah.
He has to like,
and Jim's like,
he's
no,
got to
be
that one who reminds him of like what duty calls for. And if we want to set things right, what has to be done? He's like his inner conscience. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I think you just touched on what made TOS so special is that you had McCoy, who was the emotion. You had Spock, who was the logic, and you had Kirk, who was balancing the two by taking advice from one and the other and then making a decision based on that. And I think that
right.
was the
yeah.
what made TOS so special.
That's
one of
the
my,
Trinity
anyway,
dynamic, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Really,
Spock
really
McCoy interactions are my favorite, for sure. They're just hilarious. And that continues on into the movies, of course. They have a lot of banter all the we talk a lot about the virtues of Spock. So I want to talk just very briefly about one really uncomfortable Spock moment that I have. And we've talked about it, when we did our movie reviews. So in Star Trek VI, you know, we suspect at one point that Valeris, is the problem, and she has actually been caught red-handed, and they need to get some information out of her. And Spock takes it upon himself, in the presence of all these other people, to mind meld with Valeris and to get the information that he needs. And at this point, he's so mad at her because she was like his protege. He trusted her, gave her all this access, and she betrayed him. And so he begins this mind meld as far as I'm concerned, kind of anger standpoint. He's like, I'm going to force some information out of you, and I'm going to do it with this mind meld. And we all know that mind melds are a very intimate thing, right? I mean, the two people literally share a consciousness with one another. So the thing that I probably love most about that particular scene is not that that's going on, because the mind meld itself makes me really uncomfortable when I watch it, but at the end, when Spock's voice cracks after he's done this mind meld and he tries to talk to everybody about what he just learned, that is some of the best literal acting I've ever seen in my entire life. And Leonard Nimoy just, absolutely blew that scene out of the water. But it is a moment that makes me feel a little uncomfortable about Spock, because we know that when his emotions are fired up, he is willing to do some stuff that, like, by at least by today's standards, I would say, is probably not okay, and probably was not okay back then either. In fact, definitely wasn't okay.
That's a perfect segue. Why don't we talk about all of the people who have played Mr. Spock, because there's a lot more than just Leonard Nimoy, and I think there's a lot more than people might actually realize. You have that list in front of you, Eric?
Let me see. I will pull it up here real quick. I did not have it pulled up, but yeah, it's coming up right now. So yeah, the really amazing thing is that people don't realize how many people have played Spock, right? Right, Jim? Like,
exactly.
It's
okay.
An intense
Let's
number.
Look at how many people played Spock just in Star Trek II?
That's right. Yeah.
Star Trek III. Star Trek
right.
III.
Yeah, so if we go through our wall of Spock and all of the people that have played Spock, we of course have Leonard Nimoy, and he did it all throughout, you know, all of the movies and everything. He's the one that everybody knows about. The show that we love to talk about on this series that we just literally reviewed this episode a couple of Mondays ago was Billy Simpson from the animated series. So he plays young Spock. When Spock time travels back. So we've got Billy Simpson, that's two. And then you're right, Charles, we dig into Star Trek III. So we have Carl Steven, who plays Spock at age 9. We have Vidya Padenza, who plays Spock at age 13. We have Stephen Manley, who plays Spock at age 17. Then we have Joe W. Davis, who plays Spock at age 25. So that right there is four Spocks. In one movie, plus the regular Spock. So that's five Spocks out of one movie. But then we move on. When we get into the 2009 movies, of course, we get two actors who portray Spock. We have Jacob Kogan, who plays young Spock in Star Trek 2009, which I personally love those Spock scenes from that movie. Some of my favorite Spock scenes ever in movies. And then, of course, Zachary Quinto, who played him in three different Star Trek Kelvin timeline movies. And then we get into Discovery / Strange New Worlds. We have Ethan Peck these days. And then also from Discovery, we have young Liam Hughes, who plays the child Spock that Michael Burnham grows up with. So if you count those all up, that is 10 actors, 10 people who presumably are part of the guild. I believe everybody... Maybe not every one of those headlines, but 10 actors who have portrayed Spock. But Jim, what about the secret Spock? What about the secret 11th Spock? Do you know about that one?
The secret 11th Spock?
The secret 11th Spock is from your movie, and you mentioned that exact scene tonight, in fact. The scene where we see young Spock, and he's so human. That baby, that's the secret 11th Spock.
Does he have a name?
He doesn't. He's an uncredited baby. That's why
he's
I don't
an uncredited
give him
baby.
Credits.
Oh, dude, he's, if you're not in SAG, it's not canon. Sorry.
But he's a baby, and that is Spock the
character. You're like a Hollywood scab. That baby's
ten
a scab,
half,
dude.
10.5.
Please.
10.5 actors.
That's awesome stuff. Do we have time to mention one more episode?
Absolutely.
There's just one, I just watched it again recently, and, you know, some of them, it's like, I swear, you could have seen it 30, 40 times over the course of the years, and they just still hold up like they were just made. But I just got to really briefly mention back to season one, which is just where there was so much good stuff going on. But this side of paradise, right, that is an incredible episode, because on that one, they go to this planet, and you find out that there are these spores that are keeping everyone alive, and so they're not dying from radiation poisoning like they might. But one of the mm-hmm. colonists on this planet is this young woman who used to be in love with Spock years ago. And there's the back in their days at either the Academy or a science outpost or wherever, there's a pretty strong indication that, you know, that they were – close, but she could never really break through and get him to be open with her. There was some intimacy there, it's kind of implied, but could never crack through. And because of the influence of these spores, everyone's inhibitions come off, and they're able to just be... Yeah, it's basically the show is like a giant 60s metaphor for, you know, for pot, essentially, right? I mean, it really is. It's just like, oh, now you can just be yourself and you'll be fine. And Spock just lets his hair down as long as it could go, metaphorically. And he is just having a great time. He's able to romance her and he's able to be himself. And then Kirk has to piss him off to shake off the influences of the spores. He's got to really get in his face and insult him, because violent emotions are the only things that drive the spores away. And so he basically has to call him every name in the book and get him so angry that Spock may actually kill him. You know, it's almost the only other time we saw Spock really break something is like an Amok time where he smashes the viewer in his quarters, right? Mm-hmm. But he's a powerful dude. And then at the very end of that episode, right, you know, they're all kind of doing the thing as the ship pulls out of orbit, and they're having their little reminiscence, and Spock says, he goes, they ask him if he has anything to say, and he's like, no, but for the first time in my life, I was happy.
Yeah.
Boom. I mean, mm-hmm. That is like, what a
mic-dropping
moment, man.
Story and teleplay by DC Fontana, you guys, of course.
Yeah. I mean, she basically created that character, at least how we come to know her. I mean, because she pivotally wrote all, you know, so many of those in-depth Spock stories. But that one just gets me every time, because Nimoy gets to really, it's an incredible performance, because he gets to be human for, you know, half the episode. And it's just enchanting. And you get to see him have this love relationship, and then he can't keep it. You know, it's like, so he wants it so much, but he's not allowed to have it. Again, it's like that other half of his, you know, duality comes up, and it's like, no, you may want this and it may make you happy, but you're not allowed to have that. And it's just, I think a lot of people relate to that kind of thing as well, where it's like you have to make a sacrifice for Spock. It's always the needs of the many, right? And you really see that powerfully in this. So if you haven't watched this episode in a while, fans, season one, I think it's episode 24, The Side of Paradise. Yeah. Go watch it again. It's really, really remarkable.
Yep.
Well, don't forget.
Well,
Leonard Nimoy. Go ahead.
If you really want to get an insider view of Spock and Leonard Nimoy, and I mean, take a look at both characters. I had an interesting adventure earlier this year. I was wandering through Goodwill, just seeing what's on the shelf, and a book caught my eye. And it's like a shelf full of books. One book caught my eye. I went over and looked at the book, and I've listened to this audio before, and I'm going to listen to the audio again to it. It's a book by Leonard Nimoy called I Am Spock. And it was, I've heard the audio years ago and by him, and to really realize what a turmoil he had dealing with the Spock character. In fact, Spock actually talks to him in the book. And to get that two sides of that story and how much, because this is actually a second book. Originally, he wrote a book called I Am Not Spock. And he had to write this one in the fact when he realized he was Spock. This was copyrighted in 1985. But this is when he realized he was Spock. He couldn't let Spock go.
Well, before we run out of time, I just want to let everybody know, don't forget that Leonard Nimoy played Spock in the Star Trek 2009 and Star Trek Into Darkness, and he played Spock opposite Zachary Quinto's Spock. So we get two Spocks for the price of one. And I know a lot of people jump over those movies. They don't like them, whatever. But if you want to see Leonard Nimoy's final appearance as Spock, then you have to watch Star Trek Into Darkness. And you'll see that.
That it's, picture.
You know, they actually, yeah, they show the it's really good. All right, guys. Well, we are out of time. Did you have a good time talking about Spock? I think we could have gone on for another hour. There's so much more we didn't get to.
Yeah.
I feel like I grokked Spock a little bit more than I did yesterday.
Yeah, it was interesting. So I want to let you guys know that Thursday night on Trek Talking, we're going to be talking about The Ghost of Illyria, which is Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Episode 3. Same bat time, same bat channel, 7:30. So you guys want to check that out. And before we have to go, I just want to say thank you so much to Anna for giving us a call in from Portland tonight. Thank you for listening and for calling, Anna.
I love being able to do this. Thank you. Could I just ask, is it 4:30 Pacific time officially start, or when is it?
Yep, 4:30.
Yes.
And is it 4:30?
4:30
Pacific. I'm so sorry. I called in late, and it's been a crazy week. I hope I'm not doing anything, but, you know, just hopefully.
We love
being,
our callers.
You know.
We love our callers.
No, that's what we're here for.
Okay.
No, you're always you're welcome anytime. And we also want to say
thank you very much.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. We also want to say thank you to David for hanging out. And even though he didn't share any donuts with us tonight, but thank you so much for hanging out with us in Trek Talking, David.
That's okay. I can get you some donuts when you come me over here.
Yeah, well, you never know. You never know. And also, we got to say thank you so much to Paul for hanging out and Trek Talking with us tonight. Thank you, Paul.
Good way to start the week, my friend. Thank you so much, friends.
We start the week with Trek Talking, and we end the week with Trek Talking. Isn't that awesome? Great.
And, of course,
thank you so much to Eric for hanging out and Trek Talking with us. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you very much. Had a great time.
And let's jump over to Las Vegas now that we've taken care of our Portland crew. Let's move over to Las Vegas and say thank you so much to Charles for hanging out and Trek Talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thank you. Spock is such a fascinating character.
He is. I got to go back and count how many times he said fascinating in season in TOS. It's got to be a lot. I didn't count them, but it's got to be quite a few. And, of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, coming to you live from Vermont. And we will be back. No, we won't. We won't be back next Monday because it is Memorial Day weekend. So there will be no show next Monday. However, the following Monday, we're going to go back and take a look at Star Trek Picard Season 2. We have all the fan scores. We have all the fan ratings. We have the total rating by the fans for the entire season. And we're going to go back and we're going to talk a little bit about Star Trek Picard Season 2 on our next Trek Talk and Overflow show, which won't be next Monday. It will be the following Monday. So mark your calendar for that and make sure you check us out on Facebook at Trek Talking and Beyond. Spell that all out. Let us know where you're listening from and listen for your name on a future fan shout out. So I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying please, everybody, stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.